Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, December 5, 2020. Crude price hits 9-month high above $46 by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Oil prices reached a 9-month high, ending the week above the $46 level on the New York Mercantile Exchange, even as members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and affiliated nations, including Russia, agreed to add 500,000 barrels of production to markets in January. West Texas Intermediate rose 62 cents, or a little over 1%, to close the week at $46.26 per barrel, up from $45.34 at Monday's close. The posted price was $42.75 Friday. Natural gas on the NYMEX was largely down this week, suffering a 10-cent drop Wednesday and 27-cent drop Thursday. Prices recovered about 7 cents of Thursday's decline on Friday, closing at $2.575 per MCF, down almost 30 cents from Monday's close of 2.88 per MCF. Jeff Eshelman, Senior Vice President of Operations and Public Affairs with the Independent Petroleum Association of America, told the Reporter Telegram by email, "For the oil and natural gas production industry, optimism around a vaccine is obviously a huge positive. A healthy natural gas and oil industry is good for America, bolstering the economy and national security. Increased natural gas production has also benefited our environment, making America a leader in global emission reductions and providing the nation with its cleanest air in 20 years," he said. "United States' dominance in oil production has made us the envy of nations, reducing our reliance on foreign and unstable countries, while reducing our trade deficit and helping our world allies. Sweeping lockdowns in the spring aimed to stop the spread of COVID-19 contributed to crashing oil prices. The dramatic fall in prices resulted in our member companies seeking a pathway to recovery," Eshelman said. "The industry lost more than 100,000 jobs between March and August. Our optimism is cautious, though, but producers and consumers alike should continue to seek policies that always provide access to affordable, reliable American energy." The Associated Press reported that rising oil prices are benefiting energy companies as they continue to climb out of the deep hole seen in April, when prices briefly went negative, as the COVID-19 pandemic caused a collapse in oil demand. The AP said energy companies were some of Friday's best performers. Midland's Diamondback Energy jumped 12.7%, and Occidental Petroleum, one of the top producers in the Permian Basin, gained 13.4% for the two biggest gains in the S&P 500. Both stocks remain down by about 50% for the year. Nation's rig count up 32% by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. More rigs continue to be activated across the country as activity continues to recover from record lows reached in August. The oil field service company Baker Hughes, which has tracked the rig count since the 1940s, and data analytics company Enverus said Friday the nation's rig count rose 3 to 323, well above the historic low of 244 reached in mid-August. Still, the count is 476 rigs below the 799 at work a year earlier. There were 246 rigs drilling for oil, up 5 for the week, but 417 below the 663 seeking oil last year. There were 75 rigs drilling for natural gas, down 2 and down 58 from 133 drilling for natural gas a year ago. Texas added 2 rigs for 149 active in the state, 251 below the 400 recorded in Texas last year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 59. The two states were joined by Colorado, Louisiana, and West Virginia as producing states with gains for the week. California, Pennsylvania, and Wyoming saw fewer rigs for the week. The Permian Basin had 164 rigs at work in the region, up 3 for the week, but 236 below the 400 that were active in December 2019. Lee County, New Mexico, remained the most active in the Permian with 31 rigs, up 1. Eddy County, New Mexico, was second with 28, unchanged for the week. Midland County followed with 20 rigs, unchanged for the week. Howard and Martin counties each had 14 rigs at work within county lines, up 1 for Howard and unchanged for Martin. Reeves County reported 13 rigs, up 1. Gaines County saw renewed activity this week with 1 rig. Inveris reported activity is up 14% in the last month, but down 51% year over year. Notably, the company said, the Anadarko Basin added 5 rigs in the last week, bringing its total to 23. The basin is up 6 on the month. The positive natural gas outlook is likely drawing drillers back to gassier plays, such as Appalachia. In the last month, Appalachian rigs have increased by 8 to 39. Encino Acquisition Partners has added 2 rigs in the last month and is running 3. The company hasn't run this many rigs since 2015. Cabot Oil and Gas has returned to a 3-rig program after dropping to 2 from mid-March through the end of November. After dropping to 1 rig at the end of January, HG Energy has ramped to 2. Penn Energy Resources is running 2 rigs for the first time since 2018. Haynesville rig activity is back at January 2020 levels of 40 rigs. The play has gradually seen an increase of activity since hitting a trough of 24 rigs in late May and early June. The most active operators are Aethon Energy, 8 rigs, Rock Cliff Energy, 5, and Comstock Resources, 5. Gas price spikes in Odessa. Midland sees modest increase. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HurstMP.com. The average price of gasoline in Midland moved within 13 cents of the state average this week, according to the weekly report from AAA Texas. The organization reported that Midland had one of the lowest increases in the price of gas across the state week over week. The 2-cent increase was lower than the state average, 5 cents, and substantially lower than its neighbor to the west, Odessa, 10 cents. Midland's average, $1.98 a gallon, is now the 4th highest in the state. Drivers in Odessa are paying the highest average, $2.09, among the 27 larger metropolitan areas. Abilene is second at $2.03 a gallon after the price hike of 14 cents a gallon. El Paso was third with an average of $1.99. The price there was the lone week-over-week decline, 5 cents. Amarillo and Lubbock have the second and third lowest average in the state, $1.75 and $1.76 respectively. The averages dropped by 9 cents in Amarillo and 3 cents in Lubbock, according to the AAA Texas. The organization also reported an average of $1.88 in San Angelo, a 7-cent increase week over week. Drivers in the Red River community of Sherman-Denison paid the lowest average in the state, $1.74, a 9-cent increase compared to last week. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. AAA Texas reported this week that crude oil prices rose on positive news related to the progress of COVID-19 vaccines. Rising crude prices are likely contributing to the modest increase in retail gas prices, according to the organization. However, overall U.S. demand for gas sunk to its lowest level since mid-June, and regionally, supplies increased. Even as prices at the pump jumped week to week, Texans are still paying far less than this time last year, AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster stated in an email. The average price in Midland was 43 cents lower year over year. The average across the state was 38 cents lower. This week, Odessa, $2.09. Abilene, $2.03. El Paso, $1.99. Midland, $1.98. Texarkana, $1.91. State average, $1.85. National average, $2.16. Last week, El Paso, $2.04. Odessa, $1.99. Midland, $1.96. Texarkana, $1.90. Abilene, $1.89. State average, $1.80. National average, $2.12. Source, AAA Texas. Culture. Here come the brides. Betrothed. 250 years of wedding fashion opened Thursday at the Ella Noel Art Museum in Odessa. The exhibit features dresses from the collection of Midlander Stephen Porterfield, as well as shoes and accessories such as bonnets, veils, and jewelry. Wedding portraits loaned by members of the public also are featured in the exhibit. Betrothed will be on display through March 5. Additional photos may be seen at MRT.com. 12 Planes of Christmas online event to raise funds for CAF aircraft by J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hurstmp.com. The Commemorative Air Force has launched its 12 Planes of Christmas campaign to raise funds for World War II era aircraft restoration. The sixth annual fundraiser will run online through December 31. 12 aircraft from the CAF's fleet are selected for the annual campaign. These aircraft represent some of the most important contributions to the nation's military aviation history, and restoring the aircraft provides the public with a deeper understanding, according to a press release from the CAF. The aircraft featured in this year's campaign are C-45 Expediter, the Spirit of West Texas, P-40 Warhawk, TBM Avenger, PT-17 Stearman, two aircraft, AT-11 Kansan, F-8F Bearcat, PT-19 Cornell, two aircraft, B-17 Flying Fortress, BY Catalina, Fairchild PT-23. Recognized as the world's largest flying museum, the CAF maintains a fleet of over 170 World War II aircraft, more than 70% of which are airworthy, according to the release. To learn more about the campaign, select an aircraft to support, or to make a donation. Go to supportcaf.org. Commemorative Air Force Air Power Museum hosted Open Cockpit Day on February 16, 2019. The CAF's annual fundraiser, 12 Planes of Christmas, continues online through December 31. Obituaries. Carrie Louise Green Bagley. Carrie Louise Green Bagley passed away into God's eternal heavens on November 25, 2020, at Brookdale Assisted Living in Midland, Texas. She will be cremated and buried in the Green family plot in Albany, Texas, with a graveside service held at a later date. Arrangements have been entrusted to Moore Heart Mortuary. She was born in Brownwood, Texas, on October 28, 1932, to Louis Fisher and Carrie Crosby Green. Her childhood was spent in Albany, where she attended grade school through high school and attained the honor of valedictorian of her class. During her youth, she participated in the Fandangle, a theatrical production of the history of Fort Griffin, Texas, for many years. She was an active member of the Sally Matthews Memorial Presbyterian Church in Albany and sang soprano in the church choir. She attended the University of Arizona, graduating with a BA in English with heavy emphasis on dramatic arts. She belonged to four national honorary societies, one in speech, two in theater, and one in dance. After graduating from the university, she became the children's theater director in Midland, Texas, working with Art Cole, director of the Midland Community Theater, an internationally known community theater. She taught school in several locations in Texas and met her future husband, Bill Bagley, in Alpine, Texas, while earning his degree in journalism at Sol Ross University. After his graduation, they were married in 1960 in Los Angeles, California, where their only daughter, Carrie Kathleen, was born a year later. The family proceeded to move to Kialua, Hawaii, for several years, where she taught school, eventually moving to Las Vegas, where they lived for many years before retiring to Roseburg, Oregon, to be near their daughter and her family. After the deaths of her husband and daughter, she returned to her native state of Texas and settled in Breckenridge, Texas, about 25 miles east of Albany, Texas, for several years, before finally moving to Midland, Texas in 2017 to be near her brother Ralph and his wife. While living in Nevada, she was very involved in political pursuits, in a senior advisory position for the Republican Party, working tirelessly against the passage of the ERA amendment and testifying before the U.S. Senate in Washington, D.C., she remained actively interested in politics for the remainder of her life. Carrie's older brother, Lewis, went to his heavenly mansion in October 2017, but she is survived by her daughter's children, Bethany, Josiah, Michael, Jeremiah, Hannah, and John, and 10 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by her younger brother, E. Ralph Green, and wife, Sally, who was Carrie's good friend for many years, of Midland, Texas, 3 nephews, 5 grandnieces, and 3 grandnephews. The family wishes to thank the kindnesses shown to Miss Carrie by the whole staff of Brookdale Midland, Hospice Midland, and Visiting Angels of Midland, especially the end care of Esther Sobaton. Memorials may be directed to the Salvation Army, 3500 Park Lane, Midland, Texas, 79703, Samaritan's Purse, P.O. Box 3000, Boone, North Carolina, 28607, and World Challenge, 1125 Kelly Johnson Boulevard, Suite 321, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80920. Charles Deerwood Pinkerton. Charles Deerwood Pinkerton, 90, of Stanton, Texas, was reunited in heaven with the saints by the grace of our Heavenly Father on December 2, 2020, after a blessedly brief struggle with COVID-19. Charlie was preceded in death by the love of his life, Billy Angel Pinkerton, in April of 2012, his mother and father, Henry and Dovey Pinkerton, his sister, Billie Jean Leitner, brother Kay Pinkerton, and adopted brother, Gene Jumper. He is survived by his younger sisters, Mickey Landers, adopted sister, Liddell Jumper, and his children, Tom and Denise Pinkerton, Rita and Boyce Powell, John and Sharon Pinkerton, his grandchildren, Heather and Willie Justice, Ashley and Patrick Brown, Hillary and Joshua Eisenbach, Joshua Powell, Benjamin and Kara Pinkerton, John and Melody Maynard, and Scott and Shelley Leek, and several great-grandchildren. Charlie was born May 4, 1930, in Throckmorton, Texas, and moved to Martin County soon after, where he attended the Stanton schools. As a young man, he worked as a general contractor in the construction trades, where he built businesses and homes in Midland, Stanton, and Big Springs, Texas. On October 22, 1949, Charlie married Billy Joy Angel at the Courtney Baptist Church, and they began an almost 63-year love affair, broken only by 18 months of Charlie's service during the Korean War and the death of his beloved Billy on April 2, 2012. During those years, Charlie and Billy were seldom apart. In 1970, Charlie and Billy moved to Stanton, to where for 22 years Charlie taught vocational skills to young men and women. When he retired at 62, he continued to build houses and do various jobs for friends and family. As a deacon of First Baptist Church of Stanton, a Lions Club member, and a Mason, Charlie was very involved helping in his Stanton community. After Billy passed away, Charlie lived with his daughter, Rita, and she faithfully and lovingly took care of him for his remaining years. Charlie was a devoted Christian, and until the day he died, showed his love for the Lord, his family, friends, and all those around him. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, 12-6, at the Nellie Pickle Funeral Home, 3800 Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79710. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. on Monday, 12-7, at the First Baptist Church in Stanton. Interment will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Due to the number of elderly or pregnant family members and friends, the Pinkertons are requesting that you wear a mask and try to avoid hugging. We love you and will appreciate you just being there for us. It is suggested that memorials be made to the First Baptist Church, P.O. Box 1168, Stanton, Texas, 79782, or to the Martin County Senior Center, P.O. Box 1233, Stanton, Texas, 79782. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. James Earl Eakin, Jr. James Earl Eakin, Jr., 84, of Midland, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, December 1, 2020. He was born July 16, 1936, to Anna Lee and James Earl Eakin, Sr. in Abilene, Texas. He married Nelda Jean Hurd on September 15, 1959. They were married for 61 years. He was a 1959 petroleum engineering graduate of Oklahoma University with honors. He worked for Getty Oil Company in South Texas and South Louisiana before moving to Midland in 1972. He retired from Texaco in 1993. He served as an elder for 15 years at Fairmont Park Church of Christ. He was currently a member of Downtown Church of Christ. He was a godly man who enjoyed woodworking and travel and a good pun, loved his family dearly, and loved the Lord. Always an active member and leader at church, he was always finding ways to help, work, and serve behind the scenes to make a difference in many lives. He is survived by his wife, Nelda Eakin, of the home, his son, Lee, and his wife, Maria Eakin, of Plano, Texas, his daughter, Julie, and her husband, Tom Washburn, of Brownwood, Texas, three grandchildren, Michonne Sharp, of Plano, Texas, Trey and his wife, Aaron Washburn, of Alvarado, Texas, and Preston and his wife, Elisa Washburn, of Louisville, Texas, six great-grandchildren, Anthony Field, Alec Sharp, J.T., Ella, Avery, and Emma Washburn. Due to COVID concerns, there will be a private family graveside service in Electra, Texas, at the Electra Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorial gifts may be sent to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or Downtown Church of Christ, 505 San Angelo Street, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Keith Albert Copper. Keith Albert Copper, a longtime resident of Midland, Texas, passed away November 4, 2020, at the age of 89. Keith was born in Casper, Wyoming, to the late Keith Wilcox and Susie Polly Copper. His family moved to Torrington, Wyoming, where he graduated from Torrington High School in 1951. Keith was a standout in football and received an All-State letter. While in high school, Keith met the love of his life, Alice Jean Edwards. They celebrated their 65th year of marriage this past April. Keith was employed at the age of 20 by Conoco Oil Company. He started out on a seismic crew and proudly noted he was a doodle bugger. Conoco moved him from the Rockies to Los Angeles to eventually Midland, Texas. He retired from Conoco in Midland as a draftman with 42 years of employment. An avid sportsman, Keith bowled in city leagues and coached youth bowling. He could also be seen golfing on any weekend at Ben Hogan. Keith was also known for his love of animals. He would find homes for animals that he found on the streets. Many times, these cats and dogs became household pets. One dog, Murphy, became his companion everywhere he went. They could be seen at his church, St. Paul's Methodist, doing yard work. Keith is survived by his wife, Alice Jean Copper, daughter Kelly Copper Dolly, and husband J.D. of Allen, Texas, grandson Keith Dolly of Allen, Texas, granddaughter Colleen Lovett, and husband Jared of Birmingham, Alabama, and great-granddaughter Copper Lovett. To convey condolences or sign an online registry, visit tjmfuneral.com. Michelle Nicole Saiz. On Monday, November 30, 2020, Michelle Nicole Saiz passed away at the age of 27. Michelle was born April 28, 1993, in Midland, Texas, to Rebecca, Becky, and Jesse Saiz. After graduating from Midland High School in 2011, Michelle went on to pursue a degree from West Texas A&M University. Although her passion was always in art and music, Michelle found her true love in education. In 2014, she graduated from WTAMU and shortly after began teaching at South Elementary in Midland, Texas. Although Michelle loved her kids and work family at South Elementary, she was recruited in 2019 to teach at Midland Academy Charter School. Teaching her students was her passion, and her kids were her life. Michelle had a deep passion for music. She had a marvelous voice, and she would use her gift to bring joy to all those around her. Michelle was a selfless person. She always put others before herself. She had a knack for bringing out the best in people. She was known for her quick wit, infectious smile, and her kind and compassionate spirit. Michelle is survived by her parents, Becky and Jesse Saiz, sisters Rose Saiz and Jennifer Coronado, Corey Loudermill, nephew Dante Coronado, grandparents, godparents, and numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, and extended family and friends. The rosary will be held at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel on Sunday, December 6, 2020 at 7 p.m. The funeral service will be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine on Monday, December 7, 2020 at 2 p.m. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made through the family's Facebook page. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Roger Spotts. Roger Spotts, 42, of Lubbock, passed away December 1, 2020. Services for Roger will be held on Tuesday, December 15 at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church of Midland. All COVID-19 protocols will be followed. Survivors include daughters Audrey Spotts and Megan Spotts. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ruth Ann Ramirez. Ruth Ann Ramirez, 83, of Midland, passed away November 30, 2020, in Midland, Texas. The family will have a private service due to COVID-19 restrictions to keep family and friends safe. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. She is survived by her two sons, Gabriel Ramirez and Raymond Ramirez Jr., two daughters, Lucy Longoria and husband Willie, Terry Adkins and husband Jeff, three brothers, five sisters, numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, and cousins.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, December 5th, 2020, Section A. ECISD showcases schools of choice. Representatives from all of Ector County ISD's schools of choice were showcased during an ECISD live broadcast recently. The deadline to apply to one of the schools of choice is January 17th. Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Siverson, oversees the district's choice program. She said school choice allows students to look outside their boundary to focus on interests that their neighborhood school may not offer. For elementary students, grades pre-kindergarten through fifth grade options are Austin Montessori, Blackshear Health and Wellness, Cameron Dual Language, pre-kindergarten through sixth grade, Gale Pond Alamo STEAM Extended Year Academy, Hayes Academic STEAM Academy, Milam Visual and Performing Arts, Reagan Academic, Travis Career and Leadership Academy, and Zavala Career and Community. Ector College Prep Success Academy is open to middle school students, 6th through 8th grades, while George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, Odessa Collegiate Academy, and OC Techs, which is Odessa Career and Technical Early College High School, are options for high school students. Parents can find additional information, the application and announcement timeline, and links to the applications on the website, ectorcountyisd.org. At Cameron, Principal Jacob Vargas said the school has a 50-50 dual language, two-way model. Students receive 50% of their instruction in English and 50% in Spanish. All academic areas are taught in both languages. Students may also learn French starting in first grade. Milam emphasizes fine arts teaching, everything from dance and theater to harp and violin. Tanya Galindo, principal at Zavala Elementary School, said her campus focuses on community and career. The campus is pre-kindergarten through second grade. Galindo said students learn what it's like to have a job so they can get an idea of what college they might want to go to and what they want to study. Amy Russell, principal at Travis, said her campus is for grades 3 through 5 and focuses on career and leadership. Russell said Travis also encourages leadership and skills and teaches skills needed for middle and high school. Odessa College hosts 2 early college high schools, OC Techs and Odessa College Collegiate Academy. OC Techs Principal Carl Miller said they have 125 positions open for 2021-22. The application has moved 100% online. Areas applications are being taken for now are auto, diesel, business, energy technician, culinary arts, criminal justice, welding, and occupational safety and environmental technology. If you successfully complete the program, you get a high school diploma, technical certificate, and 2-year degree from OC, Miller said. He said there is no cost to the parent or student, and all supplies and equipment are covered. Students have to maintain a 70% GPA or above, he said. At Odessa Collegiate Academy, Principal James Ramage said students attend high school and college at the same time for free. Like OC Techs, Ramage said they have 125 slots and the campus has about 400 students. As they progress each year, they take more college classes. We're all tied together by AVID, Ramage said. AVID helps with organizational skills and offers tutorials. Students also get help applying for college and filing financial aid forms. He added that students get to experience a college atmosphere before they go to college. Siverson said the application is available in English and Spanish. Ministers gauge pandemic's damages. Weakness and financial harm may be worse than fear of death. By Bob Campbell. The COVID-19 onslaught has hit Odessa churches hard, posing threats to their members not only of serious illness or death, but also of financial catastrophe. The pandemic's duration has also been psychologically wearing, as week after week and month after month, the likelihood of infection seemed to increase. The Reverends Mike Atkins, Jimmy Braswell, and Tim Halstead say the crisis initially seemed somewhat distant, but it has grown graver lately as church and family members fall prey. It's really scary from the spiritual side, said the Reverend Atkins, pastor of Kingston Avenue Baptist Church. Yes, we need to trust in the Lord, but God gave us common sense to use in times like these too. On the other side of it, we have to say, be careful, wear masks, and take all the precautions. Atkins said the crisis really shook him up when his sister-in-law's husband and son tested positive. One of the doctors was talking about the supplements they should be taking, vitamins B and C and zinc, he said. It seems like the common part of that is vitamin B. We haven't been very affected here at the church, but there are 2 in my wife's family who have been very much affected. The Reverend Braswell, chaplain of Home Hospice, said the world was similarly challenged by the Spanish flu pandemic that killed an estimated 50 million from 1918 to 20, and the polio pandemic that killed or crippled over 500,000 each year in the 1940s and 50s. Polio was such a horribly frightening thing that seemed to come out of nowhere, he said. Some things are more frightening than death. The pain and fears of economic instability are as real and difficult as any other fear, and perhaps more agonizing. Braswell said his contacts with coronavirus victims and their families also revealed deep anxieties about not so much a fear of death as of having to endure pain and that terrible sense of weakness. We love our independence so much that we tend to border worshiping it and our sovereignty, he said. One of the most frightening things for people who have been through COVID was that they would be dependent on other people and couldn't get up and keep going because they're so weak. I tell them, trust in God. It's almost too simple just to trust God to remove that fear supernaturally. Give it to Him through prayer or contemplation. It's a beautiful act of God to remove that fear in their hearts that was so debilitating. The pandemic is out of control. We can only keep it at bay. It's a great test for all of us to have the courage to deal with what many people are refusing to admit. The Reverend Halstead, pastor of New Life Church, said a dozen people in his congregation had tested positive. We believe that God will see us through this, and we're telling people to be smart, wear your mask, and follow the instructions of the people in charge, he said. We're just trying to get by, hoping for the vaccine. If this keeps up for another year, I don't know what kind of shape the churches will be in. Halstead said the bigger churches may come through the pandemic in relatively good shape, but the existence of many small ones may be jeopardized. He said the public's resistance to wearing masks has been greater in West Texas than in some other regions. I don't understand it, but a lot of young people don't wear them, Halstead said. I didn't expect the pandemic to last this long. It has been quite depressing, a lost year. We will be smaller and have fewer resources. I don't know if our faith will be stronger, but there will be opportunities for all churches to reach out to people who have been on the fringe and who will look to connect when all this is over. COVID challenges funeral homes. Directors report wave of deaths and delineate precautions by Ruth Campbell. As businesses, houses of worship, and even private homes around the region try to enforce COVID-19 restrictions and take precautions, so do funeral homes. Ruth Lozano, manager of La Paz Purchase Funeral Home in Odessa, said her employees wear protective gear such as white suits, gloves, and eye protection when they do pickups. Most of our families are asking for direct burial and cremation. On the capacity of the families, we will be very sincere. There are not a lot of people coming to the funerals. For most of them, it's only the family. But we have our sanitizers, we have gloves available, masks, and everything that is needed, Lozano said. Seating is arranged so one row is occupied, the next is not, and so on. We do not allow any food, and we are trying to not allow children under the age of 13, but that's not a restriction, Lozano said. If there is a family member who has been diagnosed or exposed to COVID-19, they ask the family not to bring them to the funeral home. Lozano said they also conduct temperature checks. I am the one who went and bought everything that I could find. Protective equipment, especially for the employees who are working in the pickup and in the back room, and also all of us in the front, Lozano said. She said one of her specialties is being honest with families. I know how to deal with families and let them know that it is very important that we don't have an open casket, that they are taking these precautions because of them, because I want them to be okay. I ask them, are you okay with that? I need to know. And if you're okay, I also need to know, Lozano said. They thank her for being honest with them and telling them that these precautions are being taken for their health. We are not doing a lot of obituaries right now, she said. People are not wanting to do a lot of obituaries. People are scared to say that someone died of COVID. Bill Valley is the regional manager of many funeral homes in Texas and New Mexico, including Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. He is also past president of the Texas Funeral Directors Association and represents Texas at the national level. It's a challenge on a daily basis because families don't want to adhere to the restrictions. So as with all funeral homes, we're trying to keep our people safe and not sick. I also manage 16 other funeral homes, so I've got some in rural areas where if I lose my funeral director, we basically are going to try to have to find someone to work or close the building down, which is not conducive for any community, Valley said. With the current COVID spike in Odessa, he said there have been a lot of deaths. We have two funeral homes in Odessa, Sunset, and Martinez, and between the two, we're seeing an 80% COVID death rate at this moment, and we've handled, in the last 30 days, over 80 deaths, Valley said. We restrict our visitation. We allow only three-hour visitations. He said he's written several letters to Governor Greg Abbott saying that there should be tighter restrictions on funerals. Right now, in Ector County, capacity is limited to 50% occupancy. In New Mexico, he said, the governor has stipulated that mass gatherings, which include funerals and weddings, are limited to 5 people. Some people adhere to that. Some people just start sitting side by side, which is not something they should do. I've written several letters to the governor that funerals should be more restrictive because people try to comfort one another, and funerals are where they're catching the virus. And our Hispanic community is one of the worst because it's their culture. Nothing against them. That's just the way it is. I grew up out here, so Hispanic culture has always been that when a funeral takes place, everybody comes. Unfortunately, right now, that is not the thing that needs to be done. With all the deaths we're handling at our Martinez funeral home, we're actually going to have to start telling families you're going to have a funeral service and then we'll do the burial later, because most of our families there go to Ector County Cemetery and they only allow 2 burials a day and they are not open on Saturday or Sunday. We are scheduling services out 8 days now. Normally it's 3 to 5. If it gets much worse, which I can almost visualize about December 7th with us having another big spike because of Thanksgiving, Valley said. If that takes place, we're going to have to go to the county and see if we can make some changes and just do burials as best we can 3 times a day. Otherwise, all the funeral homes are just going to have families backed up, he added. I know some of the funeral homes in town will not actually embalm a COVID case. We do. We know the precautions, and no embalmer actually has died from taking care of a COVID case. Funeral directors are getting sick from the families, not from the deceased, he said. The science says we don't need to be social gathering. We need to be wearing masks. All of our people wear masks on a regular basis. We use sanitizer on a regular basis. We clean the building on a regular basis. I've had 2 employees out, and they were both out for 6 weeks. They both got it pretty bad, Valley said. He added that one got COVID twice. Realistically, funeral home employees are exposed on a daily basis because a lot of families aren't telling us that they've actually been exposed, he added. He said the company that owns the funeral homes he manages has implemented shorter work days for employees. We open at 9 o'clock and close at 4 and have no weekend work, Valley said. On the weekends, we're able to do paperwork and kind of get a breather, but right now we're pretty much working 12 to 16 hour days just maintaining the families we have. Funeral directors are kind of the unspoken or unthought of person because nobody wants to talk about death, Valley said. We tend to work with our actions and not with our words. You don't see a very talkative funeral director. We kind of try to blend into the wall and only step out when needed. It's not about us. It's about the people we care for. Valley said they have tried live streaming services, but their building doesn't have the capacity. However, they are videotaping all the services and uploading it to their internet within 20 minutes after the services. Local news roundup. Early voting. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. December 10th and 11th. Locations for early voting include the Ector County Courthouse Annex, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not an election day. The same locations will be for Election Day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Free window giveaway. The Window Source of West Texas, local window replacement and home improvement company, recently launched their 3rd annual 25 Days of Christmas 10 free window giveaway, giving residing homeowners the opportunity to win 10 free windows with basic installation. Residents living in Midland, Odessa, Big Spring, Monahans, Andrews, Kermit, Gardendale, Stanton, and Crane, who are homeowners 18 years of age or older, can now enter and claim the prize, one entry per household. Additional rules and regulations for entering the giveaway can be found on the Window Source of West Texas website. Ector County resident Laura O. was the winner of the 2019 giveaway. Official 2020 giveaway will run through midnight December 25th. All those interested in entering the giveaway must read the official contest rules and register at tinyurl.com/YYFYSAR6. New health sciences building on tap at OC. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved an agreement to name the new health sciences building the Wood Health Sciences Building. The move was made during the virtual trustees meeting Thursday. Jackie Gore, Executive Director of Advancement at OC, said the Wood Family Foundation donated $5 million to fund the $39.7 million, 83,000 square foot building. Cruz Castillo of JSA Architects said the building will be east of the administration building and west of Dederick Auditorium. Castillo said it will be four floors and complement other structures on campus. While fundraising for a project is still underway, OC plans to break ground on the new health sciences building in late 2021, followed by 18 months of construction, and an estimated opening date of fall 2023. A news release said the building will be equipped with state-of-the-art simulation technology and additional square footage required to create a collaborative learning environment. The additional space and technology will allow OC to add more programs and to accept more students into the School of Health Sciences and continuing education programs to produce a minimum of 171 more highly skilled health sciences graduates per semester, up from 269 students. The building will include an additional registered nursing program and licensed vocational nursing program, along with the following specialties to fill the growing number of job openings in the Permian Basin. Built in 1970, the existing 57,945 square foot health sciences building was not built with health sciences needs in mind, the release said. It includes a small simulation laboratory, along with small classrooms for nursing, radiological technology, physical therapist assistant, surgical technology, emergency medical technician, phlebotomy, medical assistant, and certified nursing aid programs. While some equipment replacement has taken place in recent years, most areas do not have the latest technology that is currently in use by local hospitals. When the new health sciences building is complete, OC plans to renovate the existing health sciences building to create designated classrooms and a cafeteria for the growing number of early college high school students on campus. According to the Perryman report cited in the news release, Odessa currently has 2,984 healthcare practitioners. By 2030, Odessa will need 3,817 healthcare practitioners, and by 2040, it will need 4,645 healthcare practitioners. The Permian Basin currently has 8,654 healthcare practitioners. By 2030, the basin will need 10,773 health care practitioners, and by 2040, the region will need 12,765 health care practitioners. The COVID-19 pandemic has presented an urgent need for more health care workers in the Permian Basin, the release said. Increasing the number of health sciences graduates by 171 students, or 37% per semester, Odessa College will help fill the growing number of health sciences job openings in the Permian Basin, also adding high-skill, high-wage jobs to Odessa with the additional faculty needed to train these students, the release said. OC will add 9 more instructors to the School of Health Sciences at a minimum, with total additional salaries exceeding $600,000 and the average individual starting salary at $73,500. OC President Gregory Williams said Thursday was a historic night and historic moment. He added that this is another instance of the Wood family stepping up. Vice President of Instruction Tremaine Anderson gave an update on the remote learning transition plan. Students in face-to-face and hybrid courses that do not have an applied learning component are completely online. Students in applied learning courses who have labs and the early college, high school, and dual credit programs are on campus. Anderson said they are required to go through the college's health and safety protocols. The board also heard reports on approval of welding equipment from West Air Gas of Odessa for $55,705. Anna Tomaj Table and Digital Library for the Health Science Center for $81,200. And an upgrade of video conferencing equipment for the Zant Room in the Salisbury Campus Center for $136,793.41. Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness Don Wood, who will become the CEO of the Muscular Dystrophy Association, said this would be his last board meeting. Thank you, all of you, for the opportunity to be part of the greatest community college in the nation. I've loved being here and love all of you, Wood said. In Williams' report, he said the college reached $43,591, including silent auction proceeds for United Way. OC also reached its goal of 99% participation. Williams said 145 holiday baskets were distributed to families for Thanksgiving from the Wrangler Food Pantry. Professionals from OC and University of Texas Permian Basin will search for a transfer specialist to be housed at both campuses. This person hired will help students navigate from OC to UTPB and finish their bachelor's degree. Odessa District taking comments on I-20 in Pecos. An online presentation has been posted to the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, website that discusses Interstate 20 from 0.3 miles west of County Road 419 to 1.5 miles east of County Road 117 near Pecos in Reeves County. The proposed improvements to this section of I-20 would reportedly include restructuring main lines and frontage roads, reconfiguring some interchanges, building one new interchange with a grade separation, reconfiguring ramps, and converting frontage roads to one-way operation. An additional right-of-way would be required, but no residential or non-residential structures are anticipated to be displaced at this time, the press release stated. No construction funding has reportedly been identified for the project at this time. This stage is to gather information and begin planning improvements. Also, no construction timeline has been established. Information concerning services and benefits available to affected property owners and information about the tentative schedule for right-of-way acquisition and construction can reportedly be obtained from the TxDOT Odessa District Office by calling 432-498-4645. The presentation can be found at tinyurl.com/Y2TEWKPU. TxDOT will be taking comments on the project through Friday, December 18th. Formal comments may be provided by mail or email, as explained on the webpage. The webpage also provides links to exhibits, environmental constraint maps, and other general information. Police looking for man and woman in theft at Walmart. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man and a woman in connection to a theft at Walmart. The reported theft happened around 2:23 p.m. October 13th at the Walmart located at 2450 Northwest Loop 338, an OPD press release detailed. Investigation showed that a man and woman took $185 worth of merchandise and exited the store without making any attempt to pay. When confronted by Walmart personnel, both suspects fled the scene in a black SUV. OPD has released a photo of the man and woman that can be seen at tinyurl.com/Y3GBJ57R. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0018366. Obituaries and death notices for Saturday, December 5th. Hortensia Ulate Martinez. Hortensia Ulate Martinez, 73, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, November 19th. She was born in Pecos, September 21st, 1947, to Timoteo M. and Manuel Ulate. She is survived by her son, Freddie Martinez, daughter, Chrissy Ramirez, and husband, Chendo, three grandchildren, a brother, Onesimo Ulate, sisters Teresa Garcia and husband Joe from Odessa, and Hilda Baeza from Hobbs, New Mexico. Hortensia is preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Jose F. Martinez, son, Joe U. Martinez, brothers Manuel Ulate, Juan Ulate, and Arturo Ulate, sisters Maria Rivas, Rosa Olivas, and Tomasa Fuentes. A visitation will be held Sunday, December 6th from 3 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa. Rosary will take place at 7 p.m. Sunday. Funeral Mass will be Monday, December 7th at 10 a.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church, and burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery. Memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.hubbardkellyfuneralhome.com. Bonnie Audrey Allen Harrison. Bonnie Audrey Allen Harrison, 89, of Odessa, passed away Monday, November 30th. She was born in Freestone County, January 3rd, 1931. Bonnie was preceded in death by her parents, Barney and Lois Allen, sisters Frances Allen Kane, Helen Allen Ayers, and Barbara Allen DeLong, a niece and a nephew. Surviving her are her nephews, Larry Kane and Michael Ayers, and wife Donna, nieces Susan Ayers and Molly Floyd, and husband Buddy, and her little dog. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Richard Curtis Smith, Jr. Richard Curtis Smith, Jr. passed away Thanksgiving Day, November 26th. He was born April 6th, 1951 in Midland, the only child of Richard Curtis Smith, Sr. and Mabel Nelson Smith. Richard is preceded in death by his father, Richard C. Smith, Sr. He is survived by his wife of 46 years, Eddie Jean Smith, daughter Regina Bowden, and husband Evan, son Richard C. Smith III, and wife Danielle, a grandson, and his mother Mabel Nelson Smith. He is also survived by aunts, uncles, and cousins. In accordance with his wishes, there will be no funeral or memorial service. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the charity of your choice. Death notices. Damian Ray Gomez. Damian Ray Gomez, 44, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 26th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. December 8th. At St. Anne Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Father Mark Woodruff is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Ruben Lopez Rabbit Herrera. Ruben Lopez Rabbit Herrera, 71, of Odessa, died Saturday, November 28th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Monday, December 7th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, with Father Tony Franco officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Juan Rodriguez Torres, 70, died Thursday, November 26th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.